Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today we have a special show. I like to give folks options, and we know that the healthcare system has its challenges and it's not getting better. Recently, an article came out about how there's going to be a doctor shortage in the next several years. They're estimating almost 900,000 doctor shortage by 2025. So I think it behooves us to start looking and making conscious decisions about what's best for our families. And one of the things that's been spoken about, and I think people know about or have heard about but don't know a lot about, is medical tourism. I came into knowledge about it several years ago, but when I looked into it, it was mostly foreign companies, and it was, you know, it seemed interesting, but now that the world has gotten to be a much more dangerous place to be at, you know, you wonder if the companies are reputable and if you're going to be put into a safe situation. So I have a guest now that I think everybody needs to know about. His name is Judd Anglin, and he is part of MedRetreat, which is American. It's a U.S. company. And I think he's really on the cutting edge, and I wanted to have him come on to pick his brain and let my listeners know more about what medical tourism is, how his company is different, and is that something that you should consider if you need surgery, if you have to have a big-ticket medical item? Do you have to be gouged by our system, or can you find a more efficient alternative? So, Mr. Anglin, thank you so much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you, Dr. George. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, essentially where I'm in today started in 2003. I'm originally from Kentucky and ended up, I went to school in Washington, D.C., and I was a business consultant for several years. And in the, New Year's, around New Year's 2002, I went to Bangkok, Thailand with my family. And I became very ill. I think it was food poisoning, something that I ate. And I was becoming very dehydrated, high fever, and my family said, you have to go to the hospital. And I was really scared, and one thing that really concerned me, obviously I'm in a big foreign city, didn't know anything about the healthcare there, and my family was driving me to this hospital at about 10 o'clock in the evening on New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. So basing my experience, my knowledge about the U.S. healthcare system, going to an emergency room in a big city on New Year's Eve, I thought this is going to be hell. I'm going to be waiting for hours, probably on a cold floor, and I'm going to feel miserable, and it's going to be expensive, and I just don't want this. But my family insisted that I go, and when I got to the hospital, I thought that the driver took us to the wrong place. It looked like a 5-star resort, and it was the hospital. It was Bumrungrad Hospital, which is one of the top global brands in terms of medical tourism in the world, which I didn't know at the time. So I'm helped into the lobby, the waiting room. My wait was less than 10 minutes, and I was immediately greeted by a nurse and a doctor who asked me some questions, took my vitals like we do here in the States, and then they said, well, I think we need to take you to a room and give you an IV to replenish your fluids right away and then give you some medication to help you feel better. And I thought, okay, that sounds good. So they wheeled me up to a private room. This private room had a white leather sectional around a flat panel plasma TV on the wall. They wheeled in the IV pump, stuck it into my arm. It took about 4 hours as I was sitting there watching CNN and BBC, you know, all the English programs that I could find. But 4 hours later, I was feeling much better, and the doctor came in and said, Judd, I think you're good to go now. Go down and get your medication and check out. So when I went down to with my family to check out, they gave me the bill, and it was in Thai baht, so I had to do the calculations. And as soon as I got the calculation for American dollar It turned out to be $16.
What? $16?
That's what I thought. I could barely stand up. I was like, no, this is a mistake. How is this possible? And that was the actual charge. Now, obviously on the way back to our hotel and for the rest of the time in Thailand, I was just completely in a daze. I was just thinking, this is insane. People have to know about this option. I started doing research on Bumrungrad and saw that many tourists from other parts of the world go there for surgical procedures and all kinds of treatment. And you know, obviously the cost difference was so vast.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back to the States after that vacation, it took me about 2 weeks, and then I resigned from the company that I worked for. And I went into this, and this was back in early 2003, and I haven't changed my direction at all since then. So obviously the first thing I had to do was set up the company, and my goal, my mission was to promote, educate, and facilitate surgical procedures in foreign countries. So because I was a total newbie at this, I had to do a tremendous amount of research. I called, hospitals around the world. I called the U.S. consulate. And embassies, U.S. embassies in other countries to find out, you know, where their diplomats go for medical treatment. And I set about creating a process, a very methodical process, so I could do it very safely, very proactively, and without dropping any balls, you know, or dropping anything, mm-hmm. As I guided patients through their medical tourism experience. Been doing this now since 2000, sent the first patient in 2005. To date, we've facilitated thousands of patients for surgical procedures ranging from, of course, cosmetic and dental, but a lot of orthopedic procedures, hip and knee replacement, spinal fusion, total disc replacement, heart bypass procedures, hysterectomies, all forms of procedures very safely.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, what makes this story even more interesting, as I was doing this, I was diagnosed in 2008 with Crohn's disease, and I had my insurance through my wife, who had decided to take a break for a couple years to raise our children. And when she did that, we got back on a private policy, but nobody else would take me. So I had no insurance, and I was helping the uninsured and underinsured. So that ignited a passion inside of me to help find other affordable solutions, not in foreign countries, but here in the U.S. as well. So I've just been on a complete mission to help people and guide them to pathways to high-quality, affordable care. And that's what brings me here today.
Well, that's quite a journey, and one that I can only imagine when people find MedRetreat and then look at the cost and how much they're going to save. You must get a lot of letters of thank you and all sorts of God bless yous, I'm sure.
It's been amazing, and that's a big part of what I love about my job.
It's a great feeling, I can imagine. So let me ask you, you went about looking at the hospitals, finding out what diplomats use, et cetera. What other criteria have you used? I know that a lot of the doctors in these facilities actually trained in the United States. Did you find that?
Oh, absolutely. There's many doctors that train in the U.S., and many of them even stayed here and practiced for, decades.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, 15, 20, 30 years, and then they decide to go back and spend a few years in their home countries. But I think the best way to think about, and that's a great question about the hospital and doing the research, and then thinking, like zooming out and really thinking about what's happened in the world in the past 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
We all know about globalization, and it's become a very global world. And obviously there's good parts of that and there's bad parts. But the good part is when you look at healthcare, a lot of hospitals in foreign countries, the doctors were educated here in the U.S. Some of the administrators have their MBAs from the top school or schools in the world. Not that that's that important, mm-hmm. but they went about this also because they're promoting medical tourism. The reason they like medical tourism is, number one, it helps build their brand locally. You know, they can claim that they treat foreign dignitaries around the world. Then also, most of the foreign patients come there and they pay cash for their procedures. Now, that might sound scary if you think, oh, man, I'm going to be paying cash for a $200,000 procedure. But it's not that much in a place like Thailand or Malaysia. Mm-hmm. You know, a procedure that might cost $125,000 here might cost $15,000 there. So there's such price disparities that it's easy to just put that amount on a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason these hospitals promote medical tourism. Then something else to keep in mind is that many of the hospitals, these elite hospitals in foreign countries, they've been actively promoting medical tourism for over 10 to 15 years. And they receive a lot of patients, not just from the U.S., but from their regions. Also, a lot of patients from Canada and the United Kingdom and other countries where they have socialized single-payer care.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they travel is because that care has to be rationed because it's free to the patient. Of course, the taxpayers are paying for it. But because it's free, they have long waiting lines. It's something that Winston Churchill, you know, even referred to as Qtopia. People just waiting in long lines to receive, for example, a hip replacement.
Mm-hmm.
You might have to wait over a year. Now, as a doctor, I know you know that if it's bone on bone, it's very debilitating. People can barely walk, so how are they going to work? You know, if they can't get that procedure taken care of, what if they have to wait over a year? So those patients from single-payer economies have been, you know, flying in droves to some of these elite foreign hospitals. So I always refer to it as, you know, Adam Smith's principle, the invisible hand, meaning that the last thing any of these hospitals want is a really bad mistake mm-hmm. or error that leads to even greater pain or even death, because that would be headline news the next day, which would be absolutely detrimental to their medical tourism business. Whenever we send patients to these foreign countries or to these foreign hospitals, they guaranteed to us, you know, in our negotiations up front, that they would always put their most experienced doctors on the case. So, for example, if you're getting a hip replacement, they don't get somebody that's an intern just out of medical school to do that. They're bringing in a doctor that's in his late 50s, early 60s, that have been doing this for years, and they understand what's at stake. So, you know, they do the best they can. Just to give you an idea about how this works also, one of the most incredible cases that I ever facilitated was absolutely amazing. This gentleman, I won't give his name, he's 33, from California. He contacted us with severe back pain caused by an accident. He happened to also work in the insurance business. So he contacted us because he had worked with an orthopedic surgeon in his state, and his surgeon said, well, to alleviate the pain, what we're going to need to do is either a spinal fusion or a total disc replacement. But being that you're young and you're highly active, I recommend the total disc replacement because the fusion, as you know, locks the back in place mm-hmm. so that there's very little lateral movement.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing sports, golf, any kind of activity like that, it's going to total limit your ability to do that. So the insurance company initially agreed upon the total disc replacement. Now, this gentleman was in such pain that he literally could not wait to have the surgery. However, 2 days before the surgery, the insurance company called and reneged. They changed their minds because they said, you know what, this total disc replacement was recently approved by the FDA, so we're not getting, you know, it hasn't been done enough. It's experimental in
nature. Exactly. That's what they always use.
So they disapproved it. We'll do the spinal fusion, but not the total disc replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So this gentleman was just completely distraught. He got online, started doing research to find out what his options are, and came across medical tourism in our company. So he thought, you know, let me just give him a call and find out. So anyway, we talked to him, and we told him that we would be able to help him, and let's at least start the conversation and doing the initial research. Well, eventually, we found a hospital in Penang, Malaysia, that we were contracted with, that had a surgeon that's done the total disc replacement and would do it no problem. So we started the facilitation process with this gentleman, and this gentleman continued to do the research on the total disc replacement, and he called us one day and says, you know what, I have one concern. It looks like your surgeon that's going to do this surgery has only done 10 procedures, and I need to find one that's done at least 50 according to the research. So I said, okay, that's totally fair. Let us contact the hospital and see what we can do. We contacted this hospital. They said, give us 24 hours and we'll see if we can find another doctor. 24 hours later, I got back in touch with this hospital, and they said, okay, here's what we found. We found this doctor that's done over 200 cases. In fact, he's one of the top surgeons for this total disc replacement in all of Southeast Asia. So we've agreed that when this client comes and goes into the surgery room, this doctor will be flown in. We'll pick him up at the airport, bring him in, and our surgeon with our hospital will attend, if that's okay. So I got back to this gentleman and explained it to him, and I mean, he was just like, he couldn't believe it. He's mm-hmm. like, this is amazing. So he went forward, and sure enough, that doctor flew in. They did it, and everything was fine. It perfect surgery, and completely turned his life around. I mean, he was so happy. But now the most important part of this, perhaps, is the pricing. The doctor said without insurance to proceed with that total disc replacement in his state would have cost, best guesstimation, $125,000. Instead, he went to Penang, Malaysia, had one of the top surgeons in the area come and perform the surgery flawlessly, and the total procedure, including flights, hotels, and everything, was $25,000.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was incredible. So, and I think about, does that ever happen in the U.S.?
No.
It might happen for, you know, if you're someone like Bill Clinton or an A-list Hollywood type, you know, you might get service like that. But, you know, anybody else in the U.S., you're never going to get service like that.
Not without paying through the nose for it.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, I'm going to take a break, but I want to come back and explore this further, because what you described, you said a couple of things that are really telling. This is not a teaching hospital where you're getting a resident or someone in training. You're getting an attending with experience doing the procedure. You don't have that luxury in some of the hospitals in the United States. They don't even tell you who's working on you. And you don't. There's no transparency. We're talking about transparency in the professional, in the doctor, and transparency in the price. That, to me, is a recipe to make a conscious, logical decision about your health care. If only that were the case here. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a very important conversation with Mr. Judd Anglin, who is, I guess, the founder of MedRetreat. And Judd, before the break, you mentioned, as I said, really, really important things about the standard of care. What we don't have in the United States, or what we're losing, is the standard of care is dropping. We're having the people with the least experience becoming the front line of care, whether that be nurse technicians, if you're hospitalized, to physician assistants, hospitalists, who, not because they're, it's not a ding on their ability to take care of patients, it's the volume of patients they take care of, and the fact there's no way they can get to know every patient, and they're really just doing things on the fly. You're describing a system that seems to be not only technically excellent, but the customer service and the attention to detail, the things that make you you know, give you peace of mind as a patient, which is part and parcel to getting better, is something that's really prized in this system. Is that a good way to look at it?
It's a fantastic way of looking at it. In fact, Dr. John Goodman of the Goodman Institute, he's a health policy analyst and researcher and a prolific author, and he just issued an article in Forbes.com this week about medical tourism. I think it came out on Monday. And what he mentioned is so true, is that a lot of hospitals around, obviously in the U.S., our problem is we don't have any pricing. It's paid by third parties, it's paid by the government, it's paid by everybody but the patient. In other countries, they do it differently. They do what's called bundled pricing. I mean, if you're going to do a procedure, let's take a knee replacement. They include in that knee surgery everything that's going to be performed under that knee surgery. So it's going to be the surgeons, the anesthesiologists, the medications, everything that they do, time in the OR. So that they guarantee a bundle price. So let's say they guarantee $10,000 for the knee replacement. Well, since they guarantee that price, if there's a mistake or there's an error, there's an infection, there's readmission, that's an added cost that they eat.
Mm-hmm.
They have to pay. So they don't make those errors that much. They're really focused because they have enough margins in there to cover and make a profit, but not so much that, you know, but here it's the exact opposite. If you think about it, incentives, rewards. In the U.S., because there's no price, it's paid by somebody else, there's no guarantee pricing. If they make a mistake or there's readmission or there's infection, that's another fee.
Mm-hmm.
That's more revenue. And now I know most doctors aren't looking at it that way, but hospital administrators, you know, probably don't have a problem with that. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's another fee that we can charge the insurer, or we can charge Medicaid or Medicare. You know, it's it just goes on and on. So it's you're right. It's the way they have their incentives in place. Everybody's on board, and they're crossing their T's and dotting their I's and making sure that it's a very safe procedure.
Well, you know, I want to give a doctor's perspective on the bundling. You're right, there is bundling, but the hospitals don't have it, only the doctors have it. And we've had that for several years. There's something called global time after procedure's done, where you can't charge anything for up to 90 days after the procedure. So again, I want to make it clear to the listeners, it's not the doctors that are costing the money here. If I do a tonsillectomy, I cannot charge for 90 days. If I do a head and neck surgery, take out someone's trachea, and do reconstructive surgery, I can't charge them any more money for 90 days. So it's not the doctor that's costing the money. And they've managed to ratchet down what they reimburse the doctor. This is why we're seeing, or we will be seeing, doctor shortages coming up. It's not because, it's a lot of reasons. One is the people who have been in a position where they know and they've done a lot of cases like the ones you described in the countries that you've worked at, they can't afford to stay in business or practice their art. So they, I bet the ones that used to work here are leaving because they can practice medicine the old-fashioned way, but they get respect and they get paid an appropriate fee for their service. Now, have you ever been able to actually speak with one of the physicians who worked here and then left? Do you know what their motivation was?
I've talked to, with several of these surgeons, and most of them just claimed that you know, they wanted to go back, and most of them are going back to their home countries and be with their extended family. You know, like there's a very famous heart surgeon that actually left the U.S. A few years ago, and he went back to Thailand, and he's now practicing at Bangkok International, where they even use the Da Vinci robotic system, and he's very well trained in that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing the Da Vinci robotic surgery to repair heart mitral valves. And, yeah, I mean, he's had extensive experience with that.
Well, I find that from what I've researched, the standard of care is actually higher. There were some techniques in India with hip replacements where they didn't make a huge incision, and it was done through a fraction of the damage to the hip and the muscles around the hip, and people were up and walking with significantly less pain much faster than here in the United States. And it's this resistance to change, this resistance to things that are cutting edge, not only cheaper, faster, and better. It seems like there's a resistance to that. And you're right, the insurance companies have a role here. They keep saying it's experimental, and ultimately, they're the ones driving the costs in the healthcare system when they don't allow a procedure to be done when the patient is viable still. You know, their pain level is low. They're still able to work and function. By the time they keep denying you and making you manage it medically, that does change the outcome in some instances of how the patient does. And that's a tragedy, because I don't believe that insurance companies should be practicing medicine, and they actually are.
You're absolutely right, and that's very frustrating.
Very. Now,
yes.
I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and to zoom out from this topic we're on, that's another critical factor. Anytime you see a news story on medical tourism in the U.S., it always ends with a very negative light. And they always interview a doctor here in the U.S. and they say, medical tourism is not safe. You shouldn't be traveling far away for a surgical procedure. And when I hear that, I'm amazed, because I'm like, obviously we have hospitals here in the U.S. like Johns Hopkins, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, MD Anderson, mm-hmm. that they've been receiving and promoting their services around the world for the past 60 years.
That's true.
So I always want to ask one of those doctors, you don't think it's safe, so do you want to tell Johns Hopkins International that it's not safe?
That's a really good point. And I've had...
Yeah, it's like, but the key is here, you don't want to jump into it, you know, and think, oh, I'm going to save tons of money and I'm just going to go on the internet and find the lowest price. But you never want to do it that way. You know, you want to get the right information. That's why working with a facilitator is a good idea, because we've developed the relationships, we've done that research. Mm-hmm. So you'll feel safe knowing that you're going to a place that's been truly vetted.
Well, that's got to give folks peace of mind. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a very important conversation with Mr. Judd Anglin. And, you know, I want to ask another question about the transparency side of this. Why, I mean, is it the cost of living in the country? Or what is it that makes it so much more reasonable? Is their markup less? They're making less of a profit than they do in the United States? What makes it so cheap?
I think there's a whole host of factors. Definitely the economics is different, you know, land, labor, and capital. Mm-hmm. It's different in nature in these countries. Most of the countries where it's, you know, they have excellent health care, but is so much less expensive also, or mostly in emerging economies. And then also they don't have the malpractice issue that we have here. You know, if they make a mistake, they correct the mistake, but they're not, you know, awarded, you know, millions of dollars, you know, patients, for example, because due to a mistake or an mm-hmm. error. That's certainly one of them. Then the insurance industry is very different, too. And, you know, as you know, the insurance companies really raise the cost because there's a lot of paper pushing. And all the regulations that our government has created causes all kinds of issues with time and expense. So it just, you know, raised the price dramatically. And then again, because we don't have any pricing mechanism and it's paid by third parties, mm-hmm. A lot of hospitals and clinics, they game the system. And it's simply because, you know, without a price, there's no real metric. There's no information in the system of what something really costs. So I think there's all these issues that combine that a lot of these hospitals, you know, abroad don't have. One hospital that I'm really excited about and is gaining a lot of traction is this Health City Cayman Island. Are you aware of this hospital?
No, I don't think I've ever heard of it.
It's a new hospital that was established 2 years ago on Cayman Island. And it was started by this Dr. Devi Shetty. He is the founder of Narayana Health System in India, and they now have 32 hospitals. They do mostly cardiology. But this Dr. Devi Shetty, he's an amazing human being. And he wants to make healthcare affordable to everyone, mm-hmm. but do it on market-based principles. So he came up with a kind of a new model for healthcare, and he established this hospital on the Cayman Islands to compete and show U.S. hospitals the right way to do it. And I went down there last September, and I was there for 3 days, met with the administrators and some of the top surgeons, and I was blown away at what they're building. I mean, it's truly amazing. And what I found interesting about it is that as this hospital was being developed, I knew about it. I'd read about it in the Harvard Business Review and what they were looking to do. There was an article in The Economist magazine that said medical tourism didn't catch on, like the McKinsey report said that, you know, it would be a multi-billion-dollar industry by 2012. Mm-hmm. So this Economist report basically said medical tourism didn't catch on, but what is catching on is hospitals like Cleveland Clinic and Mayo, Hopkins. They're setting up foreign branches in the Middle East and parts of Asia to tap into globalization of healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I just had to make a comment. It's like, well, what you failed to mention was this Narayana Hospital Group that's building Health City Cayman Islands, and they're setting up a satellite, you know, face right towards America, and they're basically saying, game on.
Well, there's nothing like competition to make the prices.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's competition that, get this, I went on Sunday, I went to the kickoff of the World Health Congress in D.C., and Dr. George, I really, when I was there, I felt like I was in the belly of the beast. I mean, it was horrible for me to be there. But the reason I was there was because Health City Cayman Islands was there and presenting and part of the keynote. And I think that they blew away hospital administrators here in the U.S.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, it blew them away, because we're talking about quality and safety standards that are just top of the charts. I mean, mm-hmm. and they all know it. And then we're talking about pricing that's a fraction of what they're doing. But their model is utilization. If you have an OR, and it's in use all the time. So you have doctors that stay, live in the hospital, and they're constantly using that.
Right.
And all the equipment, all the medication, they're getting from India. They don't get one thing from the U.S.
So it's cheaper to begin without the markup.
It's cheaper to begin with. And then they have their pricing now, and Dr. Shetty, he made a commitment. Like, for example, a knee replacement is like $15,000. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Shetty said in 4 years, told this to all the doctors and hospital administrators. In 4 years, our goal is to cut that price in half. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to get rid of all phones in the hospital. And we're going to have, we're going to provide tablets instead, because phones are very expensive for hospitals. That is such innovation.
Right.
Imagine that. That's, it's like an amazing thing. And I think part of the problem here in the U.S. is everybody will tell you healthcare is too complicated. It's so complicated that you, average Joe, you don't know anything about it. So let us take care of it. But when you start like looking and zooming out and seeing, it's like, you know what? It's not that complicated. It's really not.
No. And it's been built layer upon layer of bureaucracy where you have people who do nothing who are adding cost to the system here.
And who gets the money first in our healthcare system?
The insurance
company. It's that bureaucracy.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're getting their cut first. And you, the patient, if there's any left over, we'll give it to you.
You know, you're making a really interesting point, because I had a conversation with a person yesterday, a senior, who told me that he went to the hospital and they wanted him to sign a waiver or contract that he would pay the hospital. He has Medicare, but they wanted him to sign another contract that he would pay the hospital directly without knowing what the cost was for his services. So he would basically be opting away from Medicare to pay the hospital whatever they wanted. I mean, instead of them making it more efficient, it seems like their only goal is to try to gouge whoever walks in there, whether it's a senior or anybody. It's not about making it better. It's about making it more expensive. But you have so many layers. And so you're right. This curtain between what's going on in reality and what they say is going on. And the government is all behind it. I think that, to me, seems like a bit of fraud. You cannot ask a Medicare patient to give up their Medicare benefits when you're a Medicare provider. That doesn't sound like it's legal to me. But the way
no,
you
just it doesn't.
No, not in any way. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. You know what? I don't mean to get off topic here or anything like that, but there's two industries or two sectors in our economy that everybody uses and really needs. Number one, of course, is healthcare, mm-hmm. but number two is education. And it seems our government has gotten involved in the bureaucracy is destroying both of those industries.
I can't argue that.
You know, doctors are leaving our system. We're going to have a doctor shortage. They can't practice medicine anymore. Teachers are also leaving because Common Core has turned everything to testing. There's no more like I'll go in and be a teacher and really help my students. No, you can't do that. So teachers are leaving. So we're just taking this art of teaching and of treating and healing people, and we're saying, you know what? Government knows best. We'll take over.
You took the words out of my mouth. We talk about this on the show constantly. This is a bigger picture. You have to look at it, you're right, from a bird's eye view. It's like a puzzle that's all the pieces are fitting together with the common goal of, you know, centralization, government control, regulation, and creating winners and losers. And ultimately, the people who die in this type of system professionally, spiritually, are the people who love what they do. Teachers who are trying to bring the best out of their kids that they teach, doctors who are trying to heal the patients, they're the people who are leaving the system, leaving the people who are administrators and bureaucrats, and it's a disaster. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think this conversation with Mr. Englund is actually something that people really, really need to take to heart and start critically thinking about. We're being led in a system that's telling us there's no other option, trying to tell us there's no other option. Just take it, like it, and, thank you, may I have another. That's the mentality you're supposed to have. But once you realize that, you know, MedRetreat exists, independent surgery centers like Medical Center of Oklahoma, of Oklahoma exist, you can start using this, the power of the purse, to put some pressure on the system. It's sad that, these hospitals want to outsource. I can tell you that when people come in, because I've had a family member come in to get treatment here in the United States, they didn't lower the price for a foreign national coming in for the procedure. They just made it, you know, you can pay in different forms, you can put a part on credit card, you can do it in installments, but they didn't lower the price. So I still think the United States is behind the eight ball in the sense of value and cost and quality. Do you find that to be the case?
That is such a great point. You know, every year I travel and visit the hospitals that I have relationships with. And I meet with the administrators. I do site inspections. They take me around, show me the rooms and all the services they have. Now, I have to say that I haven't been in many hospitals here, only where I've been treated. I've had emergencies, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly suspect and believe that these foreign hospitals are moving way beyond the level of customer service that they provide, that our hospitals provide. Now, obviously, a hospital is to treat and heal somebody. You know, they do surgeries, procedures, things like that. That's critical. That's the first part.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, they treat you as a human being that's coming there, and they want to do it in a manner that makes you feel not like a number, but a real person. And they do things like, you know, massage services, spas, things like that. I mean, they build like gardens inside the hospital so people can go sit by. And it's truly amazing what these hospitals are doing in terms of customer service.
It's attention to really healing the person. Now, on the flip side, you're in a foreign country, suppose you do have a complication, is that cut into the cost of it? Do you have to fly back? How do they work things when it doesn't go smoothly?
Yeah, all the hospitals that we work with guarantee that they believe it's their duty to make the patient whole. So if there is a complication, they will do everything they can to resolve that issue to the best of their ability. Now, you know, medicine, a big part of medicine and surgery is an art. Things do go wrong. They can go wrong. They can go wrong here in the States. But if they go wrong there, first of all, they're going to do everything they can to stick to their bundle price, so there would be no additional charge. If it's something above and beyond, likely it would have occurred here in the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm.
The pricing, the arbitrage difference is so great that it would be significantly less than what would happen here in the U.S.
So have people have to fly back to the location, or do they have a way to have people have any kind of relationship with hospitals here? They can get treated here for the a discounted price. How does that work? The worst case scenario, basically.
Yeah, well, to date, you know, knock on wood, we've had no major complications. But what they do, they have, or we have a process in place, and we develop our process with the hospitals, is that when the patient arrives there, the first day when they arrive, they do the pre-op consultations. The next morning, they go right into surgery. Then they, for most surgical procedures, they ask that the patient stay 2 weeks in the destination. And the reason they do that is because, you know, you'll stay several days in the hospital, which is another benefit that you don't often have here. The number of days you stay in a hospital is often dictated by the insurance company.
That's true.
Whereas there, they don't have that. So it's like, okay, you have a knee replacement in the U.S., you might be released on that day or mm-hmm. the next day, but they'll ask that you stay in the hospital for 3 to 4 days. Then after that, you check out, you go to the hotel, and then you have multiple doctor visits before, you know, they deem that it's okay for you to return home. Because they want to make sure that they're out of the red zone, that there's no, you know, that they have everything, no infection,
mm-hmm.
Things are set in place, and that it's safe to travel. So that's a big part of it. It's just staying the right amount of time. You would never want to go have a surgery and 2 days later get back on a plane and fly home.
I would agree with that.
Yes.
Do they actually keep you long enough to take sutures out, that sort of thing?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
They always do that. And the only thing that we've had is we did have a lady that had cosmetic procedures, and she was a smoker, And afterwards, she had necrosis of the skin, where basically the skin is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And she had returned home already. Now, the surgeon that did the procedure, he got on Skype and had video chats with her, saw what she had, and recommended that she call her doctor and told her what kind of ointment she needed.
Right.
And she had that prescribed, and then he continued to follow up with her, you know, of course, at no charge, and to speak with her on Skype and see images to ensure that it was healing.
Yep.
So, you know, that was the only thing. But this is another thing. If somebody is going to go abroad, and if you still have a doctor that you go to, and the reason I say that is because I lost my doctor 3 years ago, and I haven't been able to find a new one. But if you still have a doctor, it would definitely be behoove them to go visit their doctor and say, hey, I'm going abroad for this procedure. And we help our clients gather the information about the hospital and the foreign doctor so that they can take that in to their doctor and say, here is all the information,
because mm-hmm.
you know, I know you're not going to want me to do this, but I've made the decision. I'm going abroad. Will you do follow-up when I come back if necessary?
Okay.
And we found that over 50% of the time, doctors are more than happy to help. There are some doctors that say, no, I won't touch you. So that is true. But you should check with a doctor here first before you go.
That's a good idea. And in terms of the type of patient, for that the patient you just described, she would have been a risk because she's a smoker for any cosmetic surgery, no matter who the surgeon was. What happens if patients, I mean, how do they vet the patients? Do they have to be a certain baseline medical health level before they'll even take them? Or is it just sight unseen? And I mean, basically not everybody, I would think, is a candidate that they'll accept. Is that one way to look at it?
That is absolutely a great point. And yes, they do have baseline. We've had, you know, out of all these years, almost, well, more than 10 years now, we've probably had about 3 cases rejected. And it's because they had other medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
They just deemed it as too risky, you know, anywhere for
right.
them to undergo the surgery that they are asking for.
And I
so,
see.
Yeah, I mean, they again, these hospitals, they don't want somebody injured. Or, you know, they don't want a complication in their hospital of a foreign patient. It's interesting. One of the hospitals that we worked with was the Penang Adventist Hospital in Penang, Malaysia. And that's part of the Adventist Healthcare Network that's based in Loma Linda, California.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10 years ago, the CEO of that hospital, his name was Tedrick Moore, American guy. He had been an administrator in a hospital in the Chicago area for several years before taking this role.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him at a conference one time, and he said that they brought in a patient that had injured himself on a bicycle and punctured his lung and waited too long to come in, and the doctors knew that there's nothing they could do to save this guy. Infection had set in. They had all kinds of other complications. I'm not sure, you know, I don't have a medical background, but he was basically saying this guy was at death's door.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him who he was, and they said that they said his last name, and he was apparently related to Tom Brokaw. And Tedrick Moore was like, oh, my God. Can we take him to another hospital? Because he was just concerned that, you know, the news story coming in about a negative story, they're so cautious about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's about their reputation, so I totally get that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on your website now. It's called medretreat.com, and I'm looking at the medical procedure insurance that you guys offer or partner with. So it says that medical complications, you have a $50,000 coverage policy. So you actually do, you are protected, or you can extra protect yourself, it looks like, in case of something happening that is not going to come out of your pocket, but you actually carry a specific insurance for it.
Yeah, we have that, and we do offer it, but we're always, you know, we... Like, the terms and conditions of these medical tourism policies,
mm-hmm.
They're written in a way that's really confusing, and the instances that they cover are highly unlikely. So, you know, so in other words, yes, you can get a policy like that, but we always say, you know, read the fine print and understand that it's unlikely that this would work.
Okay.
But at least we offer something. But, you know, that's another great thing about, you know, Liberty HealthShare. I think you've discussed before.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they pay anywhere in the world as long as the bills are in English.
Well, that's, my listeners don't know that, actually. It was the conversation that we had off air. But Liberty HealthShare, which my listeners know that I'm a member of, is now expanding what it's going to cover, and they're going to offer their members medical tourism as a benefit. So you can use something like Med Retreat starting in the fall, correct?
Correct.
That if you want to get your hip replaced or go somewhere out of the country and get the best care for the most efficient, you know, the best delivery, the most cost-efficient care with the best doctors that you want to go to, Liberty HealthShare will not stand in your way. And that means it's head and shoulders, even more so in my opinion, above the insurance industry, where they're all about denying care to get a premium and not pay out. This is a completely different mindset.
Yes, that's absolutely right. The standard health insurance industry, they've been looking into medical tourism, I think, since about 2006, 2007 timeframe, and they were very interested in it, but they decided not to go through with it because of liability and what they referred to as continuity of care. They wanted to offer it, but they stay away from it. And I'm sure the relationship that they have with local hospitals here in the U.S. as well. So it's great to have an organization that's focused purely on the customer and the patient, which is the way it should be.
Well, it's about choice.
Yes.
And once you do your due diligence and you make a conscious decision of something that's going to benefit you, that's medically necessary, then you should be given you should be empowered to do it. And what you just described is continuity of care. It is a standard of care that's actually higher than what we're seeing in the United States. It's going down the tubes right now. It's all about palliative care all of a sudden, giving you medical management as long as you can get it, not getting definitive care and treatment. And that's, unfortunately, unless you're in the system, you're not seeing it yet. But it's coming to a loved one near you. So, Judd, how can we reach you if my listeners want to get more information about Med Retreat?
Sure. Well, they can go to medretreat.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an inquiry form. It says getting started in 3 easy steps. The best way is just click on step number 3 and fill out that quick inquiry form. And then once we receive that, we will follow up. A representative will follow up within 24 hours and answer their questions and begin the assistance. So that would be the best way
Okay. To
reach me. And I'd also like to mention that I've started a new division, and it's called the Patient Advocate Partners of America. And that is providing affordable pathways not only abroad, but here in the U.S. You know, as I mentioned, I was diagnosed with Crohn's, and I didn't have insurance, so I had to find all these solutions. And so there's a lot of things here in the U.S., free market, hospitals, and all kinds of access points in our healthcare systems that nobody knows about. And the government's not telling us, the media's not telling us, but that's what I want to do, is market and facilitate that as well.
What's the website?
You mentioned one of them, like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic option. It's so great that you can go to their website and see their bundled pricing.
Exactly.
For procedures.
And what's the website for this part?
It's Patient Advocate Partners is the name of the company. It's patientadvocatepa.com. So that's patient, singular, no S at the end, advocate, and then P like Peter,
mm-hmm.
and A like alpha, .com.
I'm going to tweet that out so that people can go to that website. I think the more ammunition we have, the better. So, Judd, I've got to go, but I want to thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to having you back on again to talk specifically about the patient advocate part of the program.
That sounds great, Elaine. Thank you, and I enjoy being with you today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You do the same. Take care.
Okay, thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.